Welcome back, Clyde fans, as John would say. This is the episode 4 of series 2.
Episode 4 of series 2.
And this time we are doing the, is it 96 or 97? Jean-Claude Van Damme opus that is Street Fighter. So, right. So where do we start with this one? So this is obviously the film adaptation of the hit 90s arcade game Street Fighter 2. And this was a film that I remember as a kid. So if this came out in, say, 96, I would have been 15. And I would have been at about that age where, having been a big games player and played Street Fighter a lot with my mates, the film version of Street Fighter, fucking hell, this is going to be amazing, yeah! And then this comes out.
Yeah, I think it's 94, isn't it?
Was it 94? Yeah, 94. So I would have been, yeah, fame, bloody hell. And so Jean-Claude Van Damme plays Guile, which is one of the characters from the game. Raul Julia, the late great Raul Julia, plays M. Bison, who's the bad guy from the game. And then you get a bunch of other nobodies, Kylie Minogue, name one of them, who plays some character called Cammy. And this film, basically, like a lot of where they try to take a game and they try and make a film out of it, they make up a lot of nonsense to make a story out of something where there's no narrative from the game. So Street Fighter is a one-on-one fighter, yeah? And all you've got
it's
from
a two-player,
one fighter, one guy.
But then I thought they did that quite well in as far as they had, they got the setup to have all the fights, like they're all in a big tournament, and then they all go there to have a fight, and then I thought the fights were all, I thought the fights were all quite good and the sort of things that I wanted to see. I thought Christopher Lambert was great with the long wig. I thought he was very funny. Yeah.
Sure.
And I thought, I liked the one where Johnny Cage fights Scorpion and he goes, get down here! Yeah. I thought that was really good.
And then
I think, I've got to be honest, when you picked this one for a Clag Bag, I was surprised, because I think it's not my favourite Paul Anderson film, but I don't think it's awful. I think
you're getting your worms mixed. So, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I've watched the wrong film.
In Street Fighter, the game, you've got, actually in the game, the main two characters are Ken and Ryu. And in this, they've gone and picked out one of the sort of second banana characters.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point where Van Damme said he was interested or got involved, they beefed up Guile.
Or maybe, who knows,
because the two guys that play Ryu and Ken
are nothing. I
don't know what to say.
Yeah, we'll get to those two guys. But the whole point is that in the game, each character's got a little biography about who they are, and they've got a past, I guess. And you get a cutscene at the end when you win the game. But that's it. That's all you get. There's no massive plot. And there's some other stuff in before this film came out that was considered canon. I remember manga made an animated movie that tried to flesh it out a bit and all this sort of stuff. But what they've done with this film is they've just basically taken a collection of characters and just done what they wanted with it and made a film. I mean, the film's called Street Fighter, yet there is actually no street fighting in it. But there is fighting in it, but
not really.
You
say there's fighting in it, but actually. Yeah. The characters from the Street Fighter game don't fight in it until right at the end.
Yeah.
You know, so there's scenes throughout this where it's almost like they tease that there's going to be a fight. Yeah. And then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So you're expecting, what's his name? Sagat's right-hand man, what's his name?
Vega.
To fight Ryu.
Yeah.
And then Guile comes along and breaks it up, doesn't he? And there's loads of moments in the film where even the fight that I was looking forward to the most between Van Damme and Simon Callow's Bureaucrat character, which would have been a great fight.
It would have been awesome.
even that doesn't happen. So it's almost fightless. They spend more time, don't they, introducing this ridiculous number of characters.
Yeah.
It's almost like they've gone, well, if your favourite character is Balrog, so we've got to have Balrog in. And if your favourite character is Honda, we've got to have Honda in.
Exactly.
And there's like 40 people running around.
Yeah.
All with a completely different
background
and reason for being there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't keep track.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
There's too many of them.
Well, you see, I know who they all are, and I don't care. Yeah. At the end of the day, half of the characters, what they've done is they've taken all the token bad guy characters from the game and made them the bad guys. And then what you're left with, because in the actual game, the Street Fighter game, only four of the characters are bad guys and everyone else are playable characters that you would play as your own character. So in that position, there would be your good guy as such, yeah? So that's what you end up with. You've got Sagat, Vega, M. Bison, although Balrog technically in the game was a bad guy, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But what this film does is it basically sets up the AN, not the UN,
yeah.
Okay, just in case there's any legal issue there, right? The AN, the Allied Nations, are having a sort of war against the Shadaloo Nation, this dictator. Yeah. And,
Shampoo, and they've turned,
Shadaloo in this film is a country. In the game, it was a criminal organisation run by M. Bison, but they're going to change it a little bit. M. Bison's played by Raul Julia, who does what he's supposed to. He's the bad guy, camps it up, he's got a few laughs in there, whatever.
Yeah.
But in the game, M. Bison is this hulking great guy, and in this, he just looks a bit pathetic and weedy in his outfit. Did you not think he just looks...
I think that he was incredibly ill
when
he made this movie.
I think you're right. Didn't he die?
He died 2 months before it was released.
Yeah.
Apparently he did the role at the request of his kids.
Really?
Because his kids were Street Fighter fans.
Yeah.
And I think for somebody who is as poorly, if you read about it, I'll go into it, but if you read about it, he was really, really poorly. I think he's given it 110% in this film.
Yeah.
I think he's without a doubt the best thing in it. I think it's a darn shame it's his last movie.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's such a cheesy load of comic book nonsense.
Yeah.
But the fact is, you're right. He's not the M. Bison of the game because he's a little guy who's really ill.
Yeah, exactly.
When he's filming this. But I still think he gives it, like you say, he hams it right up to the hills. And you can't fault his performance in terms of doing what he was asking.
He knows what he's doing. He knows the context of the film he's in.
Yeah.
It's like no one else does, really.
I agree.
It clearly is a kids' film as well, isn't it? It's aimed at kids. And he sort of gets that and pantomimes it up a bit.
I think what they've done deliberately, it seems, is for every person they've hired who can act, they've had to hire two people that can't.
Yeah.
So it's like, right, okay. So we'll put Min-Na in it. Because she's good. She's going to be in ER and she's a good actress. But if we've got her, we have to have Damien Chapa, who plays Ken and is the most rubber-faced, terrible actor in the world. If we've got Wes Studi in it, he's good. We'll have to have Grand L. Bush as Balrog, who is just, an absolutely terrible actor.
And I'm going to say, and you can look at it the other way as well, for every person they've hired who can fight, they've hired five who can't.
Yeah.
And when you watch the fight scenes as such as they are throughout the film, it is literally one punch, cut, one kick, cut, and it is literally all the way through the film. Nobody, even Jean-Claude Van Damme, doesn't string any more than two punches in a row.
So let's get to the synopsis of the plot.
Although Simon Callow's in it, I should say he's the best fighter and actor in the whole piece, I would argue. Anyway.
Yeah, so the plot of the film. Like I said, M. Bison has kidnapped some hostages from somewhere, tourists I think they are, or relief workers or whatever, 40 of them, I think it is, 40 is the number here.
Mm. Well, 38, because he's killed two of them.
Sure, okay, yeah.
He just keeps strangling them, doesn't he?
That's right, he keeps breaks their neck, he also challenges them to a quick fight, and then just beats them every, he just knocks them over and they're dead.
Their necks. Yeah.
And he's holding them ransom for 20 billion. Now, I'll be honest, nowadays, if you had 40 people hostage and you ask for 20 billion, that's not actually a large sum of money in terms of context of life.
It's a large amount for a person, not a huge amount for a country, which is what he's supposed to
be. Yeah, exactly. He's supposed to be financing his new nation that he's made. Yeah. The nation of Shadaloo.
That will get him a few buses to run from the capital to...
And I'm
sure he could have just borrowed it anyway.
Yeah.
That's how the world economy works, isn't it? If you've got a smaller third world nation, you just borrow money.
Have we got
having hostages?
Have we got any idea what their main export is?
Cause they don't know. I think it's just
capes.
War.
Yeah. Capes.
War.
Capes, hats.
And fighting in streets.
They do a good
line. I thought it was capes and hats.
They do a good line in bus conductor hats, yeah.
They're also very good at building bases under Angkor Wat.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Or street fighting, maybe that's what they export.
But no, they don't. Oh.
No, there's none of that going on. So the main plot is, because there's a few subplots going on, is all flying around all over the place like loose ends. You've got Bison, he wants to basically get the money, and otherwise he'll kill the hostages. And Guile, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, is the general who's running the AN in this part of the world, and he wants to basically rescue the hostages. Pretty straightforward.
I think Guile is like a comedy name for him. Like, you know when you call have a fat guy and you call him skinny, because actually he's fat. Ha!
Yeah.
Guile's a bit like that, because he's got no guile at all.
Yeah.
Right at the start.
Straight ahead.
He's a bit of a straight ahead guy, not a thinker.
No.
So right at the start of the film, for somehow he's able to... So they're watching Bison on the telly, issuing his demands, and somehow Van Damme is also able to get on the telly so he can have a conversation with Bison or something.
Like a live satellite link-up.
TV walkie-talkie.
I'm not sure how it works exactly.
Yeah.
But basically, what he makes a mistake of saying, and I think this represents his lack of guile, he makes a mistake of saying, hang on, my mate Steve, I'm coming
Charlie.
For you.
Charlie, hold on, we're coming.
It's all right, mate. I'm coming for you. And Bison, who's got a lot more guile, goes, oh, hang on, Steve or Charlie. Ah. So he goes over to the hostage, fortunately, whose neck is not broken.
The only one he has broken.
The one guy whose neck is not broken. And it turns out that he's Charlie Steve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Steve now Dave. Guile knows, and now Bison knows Steve Dave. So he thinks, I've got a chip here I can use with Steve Dave.
Yeah.
What I'll do is I'll turn him into a green super soldier with Ronnie
Jett. I do particularly like that near the beginning of the film where they're having that chat. Because basically it's like a wrestling, like... You know that thing they do with
WWE
shout out where one of them is challenging the other wrestler, like, I'm going to take you down next week at WrestleMania. I'm going to get you in the cage.
It's the cage, the rage in the cage.
And then he's isn't there a bit where he sort of does the thing where he sort of flexes his guns at him. He's like that. He's like,
you're going to
almost like giving the thing, but not. And he's got a bloody American flag tattooed on his arm. Even though he's clearly from Belgium, and also his hair. What is his hair colour? It's like it's not. It's like a ginger blonde, weird, unnatural hair colour.
Strawberry blonde.
Because in the game, Guy has this really outlandish haircut, like a big brush, and it's bright blonde. But I don't know what they were trying. If they were trying to achieve that in any sense, but he ended up just looking like a ginger nut. And on Jean-Claude Van Damme, that looks bizarre. So that's what's happening in the beginning, and what happens from there is we then get this other plot going on where Sagat, who's the one-eyed gunrunner of the country, is then getting into a shady deal with Ken and Ryu. And Ken and Ryu, being the couple of pieces of wood that they are, basically have a chat with him about this, that and the other. And then they try and stitch up Sagat, and they go, no, we'll give you some guns, and they're on a pier somewhere, we'll tell you where it is when we leave, you give us the money and all that sort of stuff. So their gambit is, we'll give you the money and we'll phone through the location for you. But then Sagat says, no, I know where they are, and they're just fake tennis guns. And then they just, But my point is, right, why leave any fake guns there? If they say, we're going to give you a location when we leave, why not just leave and then leg it? Yeah. Why have they got to make fake guns for them and appear? So that whole thing goes on. But when Sagat realises he's trying to stitch them up and all this sort of stuff, they then say, well, we're going to fight you in the cage for some reason with Vega. Okay, that's going to happen next. And that whole thing goes on, that whole run-up to the fight and who they are and where they are, and they're in this sort of like, almost like Thailand-type boxing arena here with a cage. And Vega's about to fight Ryu, and Ryu does a fancy thing with a sword, and then Vega gets his claws out but then doesn't, and they're getting ready to fight, and then Ken and... Sagat having a chat about them being fighters, blah blah blah.
Why am I watching this fight? Because you're going to be fighting next. Well, great, we're going to get two fights.
This is going to be amazing.
Awesome.
Bearing in mind that all this build up goes on for a good 10 minutes, the moment they actually, the bell rings and they go to fight, fucking Guile turns up, puts a tank through a wall, probably crushing 40 people, and then gets out and goes, you're all under arrest. We don't get a fight. Yeah. 10 minutes of build up for a fight, we don't get one.
He infiltrates the scene of the fight in the most guileless way possible. By driving a tank through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Crushes the place. Anyway, so that happens.
And then, but we should also point out there's about 40 other characters being introduced.
Introduce is a big word. You mean mentioned in the background. Mentioned. Over there, by the way, is Cammy.
And here's Chun-Li. Yeah. And it just so happens that a cameraman and sound guy, one of them's a sumo dude, the other one's a boxer.
Yeah.
So we've got them taken care of. Yeah. Here's Zangief. He's DJ. Is he a character from the game? I can't remember.
So basically what they're doing, they're trying to set up this thing that everybody doesn't like Bison, and everyone's trying to get Bison for their own reasons, and that's what it ends up being. Guile, for some reason, thinks, you know what, I can't find out where M. Bison is because he's such a shrewd bad guy. What I'm going to have to do is hire Ken and Ryu to pretend to be bad guys and go and infiltrate his gang in his castle or whatever the hell. And meanwhile, Chun-Li, being a reporter, is also trying to get to Bison because he killed his dad.
Because of some reason.
Yeah. And the other two, her cameraman and whatever the other guy does, E. Honda, they're after Bison as well. And that's not made clear as to why, but Chun-Li doesn't like Bison. She wants to kill him for personal reasons. Guile wants to get him because of blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my goodness.
And this all goes on for some time. And it's a really convoluted plot. The bit where they have to pretend that Sagat, they have to get Sagat to like Ken and Ryu so he'll take them to Bison, yeah? So what they do is they set up this whole fake jailbreak out where basically they get out, he gets a gun and he takes it off of one of the other characters, I can't remember which one, it's full of blanks and they pretend to kill Guile. You know that bit, yeah?
You mean it's like a double cross, like he's not really dead? Maybe it's a bit of Guile.
Maybe it is a bit of Guile. What I like about that bit, though, is later on Chun-Li does her investigative reporting. Guile gets killed on live TV, and he's dead in the courtyard and all that stuff. And everyone's like, Colonel Guile is dead. And M. Bison does the typical bit where he's like, I wanted to fight... No. He says, actually, I'm upset. I wanted to fight him in honourable combat. And it's a shame that he got killed. Blah, 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 blah.
The thing about that scene, though, because they've got Ryu and Ken in the back of the truck with Sagat and Vega and Christ knows who else.
Yeah, but he doesn't see what happens.
Exactly. Guile gets shot and Sagat looks like really happy. Like, oh my God, Guile's...
But he's in the back of the truck.
How did he see? How does he know what's going on?
Yeah.
He's a falling covered truck.
Yeah, he doesn't look out the back.
It's one of those nonsensical bits.
Exactly, yeah. It's really bizarre how they do it. And what I also like is after they declare that Guile was dead and they do all that as a sort of... a way of getting, I don't know why, what tactical benefit is that of M. Bison thinking Guile was dead?
There's still an army, and he's pretty sure that Guile would have been leading the army. So, what now? Guile's dead, no one's going to lead the army, they're just going to wander off.
They're all going to run home.
Yeah.
Guile's dead,
yeah.
So that's one thing that doesn't really make a lot of sense. What I do like though is Chun-Li goes, right, I've got to find out what's going on. For some reason, I've got to go break into the AN headquarters. And what I like is she goes into the morgue, right? She goes into the morgue, which is empty of people, right? There's no one there except Guile's body, which is under the cover. How long is he there? Because she walks up to go and look at him, and he just sits up and goes, yeah, all right?
Yeah.
But he must have been there for hours waiting for someone to come in, anybody to come in and go, there's Guile. No, I'm alive. I am still here. And it's like, I don't understand why they did that. You're really method acting it up where he's got...
I'm going to fake my own death. I'm going to fake it so well, I'm going to let him leave me in a morgue for a day before anyone comes and has a look to see if I'm alive or not. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
There's some of the bonkers shit, isn't there, at this stage in the film? First of all, I love the fact that it's clearly just been shot on location at a few buildings. And what they've done is... So if it's meant to be the AN headquarters, there'll be a big sheet that somebody's painted AN headquarters on, and it'll just be hanging above the door. And actually, every building has a sheet on it that says stockade or hospital or something like that.
Prison.
To make us think this is some sort of a place. I love that. I also love the ridiculous outfits in the film. Like, all of the AN army guys have these ridiculously flouncy blue berets on.
Yeah.
They just look ridiculous. They've also got camo gear, but I think it's camo gear that's designed to be worn at Paris fashion show. Yeah. Like, it might help you blend into the background of that. It's definitely not going to help you blend into the background of the jungle or something. And then all the other characters, irrespective of the part of the world that they're in, just wear the outfits that they would wear in the game. Yeah, so Honda's walking around in his Hawaiian.
But he's not Hawaiian shirt. In the game he's Japanese. I don't know why they made him Samoan or whatever he is.
No, I've got no idea. And Bison's got all this awful, this ridiculous red costume on. But every single character is at some point going to be dressed up in some ridiculous way.
That's what the fans would want, isn't it? They're trying to do that thing where, for a lot of the film, the characters are dressed, some of the characters are dressed in normal civilian stuff, and then when it gets to the third act with the big fight, they've all got a shoehorn in them in their game outfits.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, the director, Steve D'Souza, I think it is, apparently said that when he was making this film, he didn't want to shoehorn in aspects of the game into the film.
No, well, he did a good job there, but, then, didn't he?
Yeah. Clearly wasn't paying attention to his own advice, because
that's all it is.
It's absolutely everything is shoehorned in here. There are, knowing what I know about the game, there are lots of pointless details that are shoehorned in. It's really ridiculous. But then, you know, there's one or two characters in the film that I like. Actually, seeing it on TV at the moment, I actually think the guy who played Zangief is actually quite fun.
I do like him. It's
he's been in a few things.
Robert Brynarski, I think his name is, from memory. He's good in a lot of things he's in.
Yeah.
He's quite cool.
He's all right. He does what he's supposed to. He plays the comic relief, and he does delivers a couple of lines in a couple of, in a fun way.
He plays an idiot very well.
Yeah. But so what happens there? Yeah, so Guile's apparently dead. Chun-Li's found out that he's not dead. And then they all decide that what we've got to do is we've got some men on the inside, Ken and Ryu, and they're off and doing what they want to. Oh, in the meantime, of course, we've got other characters that have appeared in the film as well. Blanka and Dao Sim. Blanka being the incredible shit 70s Incredible Hulk looking guy with the ginger hair. And Dao Sim being the Indian guy.
And incidentally, don't you think this is amazing that this film was made the same sort of time as Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
Which I obviously was riffing on earlier. Yeah. But Mortal Kombat had loads of great CGI in it, and characters like Prince, what's Katana. His name?
Goro.
Goro, that's it.
When was the last time you saw Mortal Kombat?
Huh? Oh, years ago.
I'd watch it again now if I were you.
Yeah, I've got to say, I bet it's not as good as you remember.
No, probably not.
Say it's pretty bad.
It's still better than this.
But my point is, here they've got the character Balrog, who is basically, like you say, just Lou Ferrigno from The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, not Barrow, Blanka.
Blanka, sorry. We've lost track of them all. There's too many of the bastards running around the place. I need to thin them out a bit, I think. But if they'd have gone for a kind of CGI creation in that, it might have been an interesting thing to do. It might have stolen the march.
Well, do you know what the budget was for this film? $35 million, so it wasn't big. They didn't have a lot of money, so CGI of that.
That still sounds to me like a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, you say that they're not still, got a lot of money.
It's still enough money to do something other than spray paint somebody green.
It's a little bit. That's a bit of money, I would say.
You can,
that's you know.
Basically,
this was 96, so $35 million would have been about $70 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would say that's a bit, quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit.
Basically, Blanka is got a different actor after that, Charlie, turned into Blanka, who's obviously got some build to him. Yeah. And if spray painting him in like light green, just like Incredible Hulk from the 70s, they've put like some crappy Star Trek type of prosthetic on his forehead to give him a pronounced forehead. Yeah. And then they've given this ridiculous like ginger afro, like fro, like combed back hair.
Orange fright wig.
And he just looks ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
agreed.
Yeah.
And then the whole, what I love is that, because I know this film is in certain ways is made just for kids, but the laboratory that he's made in has just got these Dayglow bags of DNA mutagen in orange and green.
When he wheels them out, it's brilliant. And they've got mutagen written on the side.
But they've got the, they've also got the TVs they put on his eyes that show bad footage to make him evil.
Yeah, but have you noticed as well that they put the glasses on, obviously the wrong way around, because we can see what he's supposed to be looking at. Yeah.
And he starts resisting it, and he's seen footage of war and death and all that
but
stuff.
But doesn't douse him at some point switch
towards the end of the film, he turns
some
it over.
Flowers on and shit.
Right at the very the last 30 seconds of the transformation, he puts like babies and puppies.
No, it's like his weddings like, and a dolphin
he's had 2 weeks of the most vile programming and 30 seconds of flowers.
And so that's what Blanka's going through. He's getting his muscles pumped up with mutagen and he's getting turned into a crappy Hulk and all that stuff's going on. And Dalsim's having the whole, oh, I got captured and I don't want to do this. This is against my Hippocratic Oath or whatever whatever his problem is. And so that's going on. So that's another plot going on. And then you've got also other characters to mention. You've got DJ, which is the
Bison's
right-hand man.
Bison.
Yeah. Oops. And he just stands around making quips. He doesn't fight at all in the game. In the game, he's a fighter, but in the film, he's just. In the day, he just makes quips, and that's mostly also what the guy who plays Zangief does as well. He tends to just sort of stand around going, "I'm an idiot," and that's
And at one point, he tells Zangief that he's a baddie, and Zangief joins the goodies he discovers he's a.
We'll get to that. So what happens?
Can you get to it faster?
Yeah. We're getting. I'm trying to get there.
No, it's your show.
I know. I'm trying to get there, man.
I'm loving it.
Good.
You're
loving the street fire, yeah? So at this point, what happens is that I believe we get to a point where the AN guy, Simon Cowell, turns up
Simon Cowell turns up.
Yeah, Simon Cowell. It says, you're fired or whatever.
That is also wrong.
Yeah. And he's like, he's a typical like British guy. And he's like, oh, you guys.
This is quite like the bit where Simon Callow walks into the film. Because it is, it's like he's from a different movie. It's like he's come from some sort of carry-on street fighting film. Yeah. And I really wanted, and it was just really weird to see him and Van Damme on the screen at the same time. And I really wanted them to have a fight. And I really wanted Simon Callow to kick his ass. That is what I would have liked to have seen. But sadly, it was not to be.
Then what... he basically says along the lines of, we're going to submit to Bison's demands, we're going to give him some money, and all that stuff. And then we get Giles, King Henry speech, don't we, where he's like, oh, we're going to fight him on the beaches and all that stuff. And he gives him the whole speech about fighting the good fight.
Troopers, I just received new orders. Our superiors say the war is cancelled. We can all go home. Bison is getting paid off for his crimes. And our friends who have died here will have died for nothing. But we can all go home. Meanwhile, ideals like peace, freedom, and justice, they get packed up. But we can all go home. Well, I'm not going home. I'm gonna get on my boat, and I'm going upriver, and I'm going to kick that son of a bitch Bison's ass so hard that the next Bison wannabe is gonna feel it. No, who wants to go home, and who wants to go with me?
I think I'll go home.
Crying.
Yeah.
I'll also go home. Crying.
What? Kylie was really giving it something, that bit.
She had a face like she'd been eating lemons all the way through that scene.
She spends most of the film in tears, but I'm not sure it's acting. I'm not sure. She isn't just crying.
Yeah. So the bit where he gives the rousing speech and he'll run off, that's where they basically decide to hit Bison where it hurts. Yeah? Because somehow they've just found out where he is. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. They have. There's also a bit earlier in the film where they're having, Scotty mentioned it, where they're having some kind of like black market weapons market thing going on.
What, and black market weapons market?
Yeah. And they've got like an entertainment thing going on, and Chun-Li's undercover as a dancer. And then Balrog and E Honda throwing barrels around.
Yeah.
And then Ken Ryu just walk in from nowhere. And
right, but they're in a different movie all the way through the movie, aren't they? Pretty much.
Yeah, they've got their own movie that just happens to be edited like into this film.
Like a movie within the movie.
Yeah.
And then they all meet up at the end, and they're all mates.
Exactly. That's exactly
pretty much how it happens, isn't it?
Yeah. And the outcome of that scene is that. Ken and Ryu go off with Bison, and Bison trusts them now because they went and said, oh, Chun-Li's a snitch, to gain his trust. Chun-Li, Balrog and E-Honda get captured and tortured. Chun-Li gets wheeled off to Bison's quarters for...
Oh, for one of the most laughable scenes in the film, I think, as well.
This is her slave Leia moment.
And meanwhile, Gaul's getting the troops together and they're coming down river to kick him in the nuts, basically. And so this is where we start really getting into the third act, and he does the whole comedy thing where Simon Callow is standing on the pier and he goes, well, big guy, what are you doing? And then he covers him in water as the boat drives off, and it's all very hilarious. Bureaucrat man gets his. And there's also the bit with the stealth boat. Remember that? The freaking stealth boat that he drives down the river?
Vaguely.
Do you remember?
I don't remember. There's a bit where he drives a boat down a river. Yeah. And it's a silly looking boat.
And it turns invisible. It turns invisible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It actually turns invisible. The problem with that being, of course, that you can see the wake in the water wherever the boat goes.
And hasn't he got like loads of other guys with him in their own boats that aren't stealth boats?
That's right. Well, I think he says he's coming down one river
in
his boat to distract him. And then the main...
You distract him in the invisible boat.
Yeah, I know. That makes all of the sense. And what I really like about that bit is he's driving down the river and then this music kicks in, like, we're going to go invisible in the boat. Yeah. And then Guile, out of nowhere, reaches into his breast pocket and pulls out a videotape and starts playing it. And it's footage of him and his mate Charlie with their girlfriends, and they're all having a laugh. And he's reminiscing about the good times. Do you not remember this bit?
This is the thing.
And I don't know where he had that tape, why he's carrying the tape.
I tell you why he's got the tape and why he's carrying the tape. It's very simple. So, unlike Green Lantern from the last week's episode.
Yeah.
Guile does not have the ability to experience flashbacks in real time. So the only way he can do it is by carrying the flashbacks around with him in the form of a tape that he can sit and watch.
But I thought it was very good that he just out of nowhere pulls out this tape and he carries with him at all times a tape of him and his friend Charlie. That'd be like me carrying around a videotape of me and Scott just, oh, do you remember that time we sat there and watched a film? Like, what is that? Yeah. It's so bizarre. There's a really shit scene where E Honda's getting tortured and he's doing the whole Hawaiian tropic thing, and you hear this Hawaiian music whilst he's getting whipped, but he doesn't feel it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and I remember that.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I remember that. It was quite disturbing. He's getting whipped, but he seems to be enjoying it because of the Honolulu music.
Yeah.
I thought that was disturbing. And then while all that's going on, Chun-Li is like pretending to seduce Bison or something.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. And then what happens is she's like handcuffed. And Bison says something like, you're just weak and stupid girly. And she says, that's just what I wanted you to think.
Yeah.
And then she breaks her handcuffs because she's going to have a fighty fight.
Yeah.
But it turns out that she's quite wimpy and good.
No, actually, in that bit, she does pretty much kick his ass around the room. It's only because her mates turn up and distract her that he scarpers into this little chamber.
Oh, that's and it. It runs away.
For about 2 minutes, she is pretty much kicking his ass around the room. In fact, I'd argue, kicking his ass more than Jean-Claude Van Damme does later.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say there was one bit in that I really like. I do think there's one really cool bit in that bit, and that's when she's telling him about how he killed her father, her family, whatever, and ransacked her village and did all the rest of this stuff. The reason she hates him as much as she does. And at the end he says, I don't remember any of that. The day I entered your life was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday. And I thought I was...
Yeah, that's actually quite a good line. That is actually quite a good line. But that's why I actually do like him in this film. Because he delivers those lines well. Because he's doing... And he gives that... He does the whole shtick, doesn't he? Being, you know... ego megalomaniac, and he does it all quite well.
I did like that bit.
And then what happens is, because I think basically at this point most of the cast are all running around like, you know, like a Benny Hill show. They're all running around together through the fortress. And you've got Ken, Ryu, Balrog, E Honda, Chun-Li, and they're all in the room. And they go, let's try and get Bison in that room. And he basically gasses them all, and they all get knocked out. And that's basically them all stuffed, because they all get chained up, don't they, to a wall or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And then basically, meanwhile, Guile has finally got up river in his stealth boat. They turn the stealth off, the bad guy somehow, and then the whole war kicks off, basically. And in this act, it's where you get your street fighting that's
there
not on the streets.
There isn't any street fighting, is there, until... There's no fighting at all in the film.
Not
until,
really, no.
Until this sequence. Yeah. It's all just random, very
It's almost
cuts.
Like they're trying to do, like, Star Wars, like Return of the Jedi, like have loads of bits going on in the same battle. You know, like, all these different parts of the battle are being intercut with each other whilst things are happening. So you've got... But E Honda has a fight with Zangief, don't they? They decide to have a big ruck, the two big guys. Like, even though basically one of them's fat and the other one is actually built.
Oh, so this is the deal like a Godzilla thing, don't they?
Yeah.
It's a really horrible Godzilla pastiche where they roll around a model city.
I don't know what the model's there for. And I don't know why.
It's the Bison Topolis place, isn't it? The Bison's model of his city that he wants to build.
But
that's what
there are cameras filming them doing this fight, and a group of Japanese people watching them whilst Godzilla and
Sarah
play over it. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. There's also a bit where.
It must have sounded like a good idea on the day.
Oh, this would be hysterical.
On the day, we just. Yeah. Let's do it like a Godzilla fight, because we've established that he's not Japanese, he's Samoan in this.
Yeah. And there's also,
so let's do Godzilla, because it makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
There's also Ken and Ryu's story that's going on through the film, and whilst it's all kicking off, these two are apparently going through some kind of spiritual awakening where Ryu thinks, actually I should probably help the good guys fight, and Ken's like, no, sod this, I'm still about money. And he runs off, and then he sees a camera footage of Ryu getting his ass kicked by Vega and Sagat at the same time. So he decides to get involved. So that's their street fight. It's Sagat versus Ken and Ryu versus Vega, and that's going on. And then you've got, I'm sure Cammy probably hit someone in the face maybe once.
I think she cries on someone.
Doesn't she kick someone in the face while saying, thrust kick?
Oh, no.
I think that's another thing.
Oh, she probably does, yeah.
A couple of the guys actually say the name of their moves, don't they?
There's a bit where, because some of the characters in Street Fighter in the game have supernatural powers, like Ken and Ryu can do fireballs, And in the film, there's a flash moment where Ryu actually does the hand gesture, where he puts his wrists together, and you see just a flash. You don't see a fireball, he hits Vega and he just flies back. And talking about the director didn't want to shoehorn in aspects of the game or moves or anything. Yeah, there's loads of moves shoehorned into it.
Yeah.
Loads of moves all over the place. And he's just putting them in for the sake of it. There's a really awful bit as well where Balrog, the boxer, grabs a henchman, just as one of the generic henchmen, and he actually winds his fist up before he punches him. You actually hear like a Looney Tunes before he punches out the guy.
Yeah.
And there's all that shit going on. And what happens at the end is most of the good guys are running about, and what's happening is the basically Bison says, right, I'm going to kill the hostages and you're going to get killed by Blanka, this monster I've created, my new super soldier. Here he is. But meanwhile, downstairs, Guile has found Blanka, and he's like, don't worry, friend, I'll take care of that. And he goes to kill him, and Dalsim's like, no, you can't do that because of Buddha or something. And and so he stops him from killing Blanka, and then what happens is the lift goes up where Blanka is supposed to be unveiled. And then what happens? Well, using wire foo, Jean-Claude Van Damme comes leaping out, flies about 100 foot across the room, doing a mega kick, and kicks Bison right in the chest. And then their fight kicks off, and then the whole battle goes up a notch, I guess. And then that's their fight is, the martial arts fight that everyone wanted to see. You know, Jean-Claude Van Damme versus Raoul Jules.
Literally on death's door. So ill and pale looking at this point. It's just like, having Van Damme beat up your
a kid in a wheelchair.
Beat up your granddad, yeah, kid yeah. in a wheelchair. That's the fight that sets off the end of this film.
It's
yeah.
like Alien versus a kitten.
Exactly. yeah. And it's again, it's like you can tell between these two actors who is a martial artist and who isn't.
Mm.
Because most of that first half of the fight is Raul Julia just basically getting kicked in the face.
I couldn't agree more. Quite frankly, Raul Julia, God bless him, looks uncomfortable just when he's standing up in this film.
Yeah.
So when
being,
he's
being asked to throw a punch,
it just is just a bit too much.
Yeah. And then what happens next is all the other fights are going on, and Jean-Claude Van Damme beats Raul Julia, he electrocutes him, doesn't he? Something throws him on a console, and he's like, he gets electrocuted and he dies.
Yeah.
And Bison's dead. And then he does the whole bit where he's like on the video call somehow to Cammy, and he goes, "Are you okay, sir?" And he goes, "How are you feeling?" He goes, "Half dead, Bison, all dead." Yeah. Like it's a really terrible line. And then he goes, "Yeah, don't worry, I'll come out in a moment. I'll be right there." Yeah. And he turns around, and Bison's come back. Meanwhile, come back to her life because the computer says resuscitating Bison suit or something. Yeah, and he's laying there, and you get his chest like that, like his heart is pretty much CPR. Punching out of his chest,
starting CPR.
And then he comes back to life, and he goes, "Do you know?" And he goes, "Do you know anything about electromagnetism? It levitates my chair that I rule the world from. It levitates my missiles," or something, "and it levitates me." Yeah. And he like lifts up out of and he's like, "You're right." I think John's dying.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then his Nike Airsofts light up, and he like lifts off the ground, and then he starts like shooting electricity out of his gauntlets.
Yeah.
And his one move is to fly across the room on a crane at 10 mile an hour, whilst Jean-Claude Van Damme looks panic-stricken and gets basically punched very slowly across the jaw. And this happened. This happens. Like, what happens? Yes. We're still getting all the intercutting explosion of war going on, so we'll get a bit with Cammy helping the hostages get out, and then we'll get a bit with Vega fighting and all that shit still going on, and then we cut back to another shot of Bison flying through the air. Oh, Jean-Claude Van Damme doesn't know what to do. And he gets punched again. Oh, what's going on? Oh, I don't know, now we've got Blanker doing something, and Balrog's punching someone else in the face. Oh, let's cut back to Jean-Claude Van Damme. Just getting punched again. That happens about 8 times. That's his one move, is to fly across the room and uppercut. But then Jean-Claude Van Damme, on about the 20th punch, gets the good idea to maybe hit back.
He basically moves.
And this, what does he do? He basically does like a bicycle kick over his head, and kicks Raul Julia in the face.
Yeah.
He goes, "Whoa!" And like flies backwards through the air into a wall of monitors, and basically just explodes, and that's it. He's finally been beaten. The tyrant. M. Bison has been defeated. So that's Street Fighter. Oh, and then of course, the whole temple explodes for no apparent reason. And there's a bit where Guile's running out after he's beaten Bison, and he sees Charlie, Blanker, and Dao Sin, and Dao Sin's all burnt up because he's got no hair left.
So he looks like he does in the game now.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's close to what he is in the game.
Yep.
And he goes, "Come with us." Guile's like, "Come with us." He goes, "No, I must stay here with him and undo the damage I've done." Stay here? This place is blowing up. Yeah, we're gonna stay here and sort something out. But the whole temple at the end of the film literally explodes, like just goes up in a massive mushroom cloud. So they're clearly dead. They're gone. I don't know what that was. Maybe some Buddhist philosophy or something. I don't know. And everyone's on the beach and they're seeing the temple explode. All the characters except Guile, and Cammy's crying about Guile's gone.
Literally crying.
I can't believe it. My favourite character from the game is dead, and all that's going on. And pretty much all the characters, except for one or two bad guys, are on the beach. All like what's his name? Zangief's now a good guy because DJ turned around and says, "You know, M. Bison's a bad guy." God. He was the bad guy? And that's his line, his big moment of realisation. Yeah.
Hilarious
stuff. Yeah. And they're on the beach, and then Gold comes out and he's like, oh, I made it, don't worry. That was a big explosion, wasn't it? Yeah. And then Cammy stops crying and he goes, and he has his moment where he basically like shakes hands with every character through the game and goes, yeah, I'm glad you, Ken and Ryu, became good guys now. Oh, hi, Zangief, here's how you do a thumbs up properly. Oh, hi, yeah, hey, Balrog and the Honda, yeah, how you doing, yeah. And then the big explosion goes off at the end and they all turn around to the camera and do, from the game, their win poses, which is, Guile does the gayest, like, muscle flex where he turns on his hips like that. He's like, and you've got, like, Cammy jumps in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Chun-Li does her like girly jump thing, and then all the characters in the game, and he gets freeze frame, and it's just the gayest thing I've ever seen.
It's the gayest ending of a movie.
Yeah,
ever.
It's unreal.
Incidentally, this is the other thing that struck me as weird at the end, because maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention to the story. I don't know. Maybe I missed the subtle nuances of a budding relationship beginning to blossom. But basically, Cammy's crying about Guile. Guile turns up and everything, and he's okay. He ignores Cammy, just gives her a little smile, and then completely hits on Chun-Li in a red dress and says, do you want to go out on a date in your red dress? Then I miss something. where was this? And she's all over him, like a rash. And I'm like, where did any of this come from?
I know,
I have, clearly, Cammy's like been worshipping Guile all the way through the film.
Yeah.
Now suddenly, he's not interested in her.
Yeah.
And he's all over Chun-Li in a, like, in a quite a horrible, kind of slimy way. What did I miss?
A drunk uncle.
Like a horrible, lecherous Belgium uncle. Yeah. And I was just, did I sleep through the film? What did I miss?
I know, there's a few things like that. And also, talking about the videotape he's watching in the boat, him and Charlie are clearly on a double date with two other women, so who were they? He's just a womaniser, this guy. He just goes from random woman on videotape to Cammy, I've had enough of you, Chun-Li, do you want some? Like, it just goes from woman to woman.
I'm surprised he didn't hit on Honda at the end of the film, I don't know.
Yeah, I also like, there's a few other things about this film that I really like. One of them is that in this film, we talked earlier about that we've got like some actors in it, and then we've got some clearly bad actors in it. But also, this film seems to employ a couple of non-actors into speaking roles. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, it's like one of the commanders directly under Guile's command. It's this guy who speaks broken English, like he's speaking it phonetically. Where there's a bit where Guile lays out his plan and says, we're going to go you're going to take this river and go to the other. And the guy says in like really broken English, I can't remember how he says it, but he goes, Commander, you think we should go up this river one boat against all he's got? And he's like, I don't know who this guy is and why they got him to deliver that line. It's literally a non-actor. He does it a couple of times, two or three times throughout the film. He delivers a couple of lines and it's the most broken English I've heard in a film in a long time.
No sense of what he's saying at all.
Yeah, exactly, And I also like, there's another bit in the film where some of the characters meet E. Honda and Balrog, and then somebody asks them, why are you getting involved in this whole thing against Bison? And Balrog's, E. Honda says, M. Bison discredited me as a sumo wrestler. And Balrog says, yeah, he did the same thing to my boxing career. What benefit is it to some...
Yeah.
Dictator in Asia discrediting a boxer and a sumo wrestler.
Exactly what I was going to say. Apparently, he's interested in two things: world domination and sports. That's his thing.
And that is their entire justification for those characters existing in the film.
Yeah.
That M. Bison would go out of the way to discredit these two sportsmen.
Is that why they retrained then? So they retrained as camera and sound men.
Yes.
So they could join a news crew, so they could get back to Chandaloo, so they could get revenge it's Chambambaloo. What's going on? What we're meant to believe?
Chun-Li, why are you going such a downer about M. Bison? He ended my ping pong career.
Chun-Li's got a reason. Dad got killed by him. That makes sense. That's a half decent reason for revenge.
Fair enough. But I can't box anymore because of him. Well, get a job as something fucking else then.
He did.
Cameraman. He's had a good career, bollocks. Yeah, he's on an international news channel. But the point is, at the end of the day, I still go back to the original point. I don't understand why this dictator would go out of his way to discredit these two people.
The sumo wrestler, and, yeah, I don't know.
It's
yeah.
such a bizarre. But yeah, I mean, apart from that then, going from through the plot, what do you guys have to add to this?
Well, we haven't actually finished the plot yet, have we?
What do you mean?
I turned it off. So as far as I'm concerned, this whole thing ends when they all do the comedy pose on the beach.
Well, John, it doesn't. Basically, at the end of the secret credits, it's the computer recharging itself. Bison punches. You see Bison's fist punched back out of the monitors he died in, and then it comes up over a bloody, I don't know, some old Windows computer. And it says, what do you want to do? And he clicks on World Domination Replay, which is just, well, yeah, shite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what did you guys think then?
Well, it's
what's your two cents to all this?
It's a giggle. I did have fun watching it, you know, again, for totally all the wrong reasons. But I think, in fairness, it quite obviously is a kid's film.
Yeah.
Like, if you were seven, you'd lap that shit up. You'd love it. I'm not seven.
What did you think, John? Although, bear in mind, this film was a 12 when it came out.
Yeah.
John? John's lost for words, I think.
I really don't know how you can... This film exists in its own world.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's not a world I ever want to revisit. it's hard to... I mean, clearly it's a lot of fun, but it's terrible.
Yeah.
And it emphasises all the wrong stuff. So it goes out of its way to tell us, even if it's illogical and makes no sense, what the motivation is for every character to fight. And then there's no fights.
Yeah.
For me, it emphasises all of the wrong stuff. I mean, I mentioned Mortal Kombat earlier. You're right, I haven't seen it recently, so I might watch it again and think it's an absolute bag of crap. But I do remember that what I liked about it was that there was a bunch of people that go to an island with the intention of fighting each other until there's only one left.
And that's the game, and they
do that in about 2 minutes, and then all you've got for the remainder of the film really is
one
set piece after another of fights of different characters who you would have played in the game fighting the characters that you would have played in the game. And it might not have been perfect, but it did what it said on the tin.
Yeah.
For me, the issue with Street Fighter is they've created this entire, or tried to create this entire world in which these characters could operate. And actually, there's no logic to fighting games. They're just fighting games.
Yes. Yeah.
And you can't create an internal logic for that works, because it just doesn't.
Yeah.
So all the time in the movie spent trying to create that logic is wasted time.
Exactly.
And that's ultimately why I found the film hard work, because I just wanted more of the fun aspects of the film and less attempts at... Yeah, less guff. Just more fighting and less guff.
And while it comes to the fighting part of it, there is one thing I really hate about Hollywood films, especially when they try and make martial arts films, which is what that's supposed to be, even like I say, it's a kid's film. But I hate it when they get actors who can't do martial arts and then they make them fight.
Yeah.
Now, it's all very well, like The Matrix, like Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, but they spent months training before that
and they look really good when they did what they did. Obviously, these guys didn't get that training.
No.
And so the fights are shite, because each one is literally, as I said earlier, punch, cut, kick, cut.
Yeah.
There's no flow to any of the fights.
Like Rapper the Rapper.
Yeah.
Punch is all in your mind.
Yeah, and then not only that, but they've hired actual martial artists. They're dotted out throughout the film. There were a couple, I've forgotten some of them, but the one that stands out is
Simon Callow.
Yeah. And Benny the Jet Urquidez is in there. Now, Benny the Jet Urquidez, a fantastic martial artist. He's been in a few martial arts films. He was in a couple with Jackie Chan. He's an awesome fighter. And in this, they load him in the back of the van with Sagat, and that is it. He does nothing else in this film but get chained up and put in a van. Why put him in it? Why remind us that there are people out there that can fight and then not use them?
Yeah, I think my main issue is what I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, which is that what they've done here is they've taken, like John says, they've taken all this collection of characters and they've tried to just make a plot They've just tried to shoehorn in all these characters into a plot and a world that wasn't in the game, and they've just put them all together, and it's a mess.
But I think another thing they did wrong is, although they based it on the game and it is Street Fighter, they didn't need to put every fucking character in there.
No. They could have boiled it down to six characters. Yeah.
That's ultimately one of the biggest flaws with the film.
Yeah. In fact, there are some characters in the game in there that they don't even really highlight as being a character in the game. There's a guy in it who follows around Cammy and Guy all the time, and his name's Tomahawk.
Yeah.
And he's a tall guy with the slick back hair.
Oh, yeah, so he's another guy in the AN.
Yeah, he's actually like the Indian chief character from the game.
Right.
But they've got him in the film, but he's just a mute extra in the background. It's like, well, don't even put him in then. Don't put him in. If he's not going to add anything at all, all you're doing is you're just putting in eye candy for fans. But the fans of the game back then would have been kids my age or older. Back then, people were probably in their early 20s. And this film is made for kids. So it really was made for
I think Mortal Kombat had 8 characters in it, basically. It had like 4 goodies, which were Johnny Cage, Liu Kang, Sonya, and Raiden, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then it had 4 baddies, who were Shin Tsung, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, and Prince Goro. That was pretty much it. There was a couple of characters around those, but... And then it just rolled some dice and said, well, we'll put him against him and him against him.
Yeah.
That, for me, and again, I need to rewatch it, much better than this. Certainly had fights in it.
Yeah. There were a lot of characters in it, but only focused on sort of the main three, didn't it?
Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah. So the rest of them, although they were in it.
And then you go back to the original title of the film, and there is not actually a single fight that takes place on a street.
That was my, what I said right at the top of the podcast.
Yeah.
There's no streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No
at what
fight,
point
no,
is there like streets, a...
there is plenty of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
In the other film.
Yeah. So would we put this in the clag bag?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a film to watch
fun.
With friends.
Yeah, it is fun.
Yeah.
And it is fun.
I do like some of Jean-Claude Van Damme's lines as crap lines to reiterate.
And there's a lot of mad bits in the film where I think that... Just the costume design alone almost warrants it going in.
So, like I say, Raoul Julia was very good in it, given what he got to do. And I think, if you're playing it as a pantomime character, which I think he probably was, he did a very good job. Loved him in it. I really liked Zangief. I thought all of his bits were pretty funny.
Yeah, I liked him as well.
I like that guy. And,
that was it. In terms of
pretty much it in terms of actual acting. I didn't like anybody else really particularly in it.
No.
But it was a giggle.
Yeah, no. I think it's a very good laugh, and I recommend it to if you got it on Netflix, you can find it there. I think you could even see it on YouTube. I think somebody mentioned recently it's the whole thing on YouTube. If you want to watch it on there,
okay.
So if you've got a couple of mates and you want to watch something shitty that's a good laugh to rip, then I'd definitely recommend it.
Street Fighter wins.
Thanks.
did Colin make had anything
no,
to say
Colin,
about this?
Colin doesn't like this film, so I'm afraid today there isn't a what does Colin think.
What does Colin think segment.
That is a good segue to next week's show, which is Scotty's choice. So what are we doing next time, Scott?
Next week we're doing quite possibly one of the best superhero films ever made, Batman and Robin.
Shit.
AKA Batman on Ice.
Yeah.
AKA Batman the Musical. AKA Batman and Robin and Batgirl and Poison Ivy and Albano. And Mr. Freeze.
AKA My Big Fat Gay Gotham Wedding.
Right, well, we'll be back soon. I've been Nud.
I'm Scotty.
He's dead.